Well, a very good evening to you out there, and thanks for tuning in this Monday evening here to us on Terrace Talk, coming to you as always live from our studios here in Tralee, Shiv Tranona, on Va Amo and Shin. August, Gorevma, August, Aston Tanulishtak, Tranona de Luan, our Shah, our Terrace Talk. And if you want to get in contact with us here this evening, our phone lines are open 0667123666, or you can text or WhatsApp us on 0833003300. Tonight's show, we look back at the wins for Kerry over Galway in the National Football League, and indeed the Ladies League as well. The men missing out on the final spot, of course, through scoring difference, but the ladies have secured the spot in the Division 1 final with Armagh, and they will have a chance, of course, to have back-to-back Division 1 titles. How exciting will that be? We'll take a look at what a warm weather training facility is like. I was going to say we're going to bring Liam and John to the sun, but unfortunately we're just going to look at it online. We're just going to have a look what it is, and then Carney will pop in around 6:30 as well on the line. In the second hour, we'll be chatting hurling and mothers and others, and then we will finish up this evening with all the talk from Ross Moon, which is taking place across the county next weekend as well. But before we start, a big huge congratulations, I suppose, over the last number of weeks we've been talking Kerry hurling, and I suppose, you know, we're kind of down the doldrums talking about, and the results not going all right, but what a positive result the Kerry Miners hurlers had over the weekend, claiming their first win over Carlow in the Leinster Championship. Indeed, it was a historic first, and well deserved to all those who played and all those who are helping out in the background as well. And we certainly will keep an eye on them. They're against Laois there in the next couple of weeks. But Kerry made it win number 5 in the Islands National Football League yesterday, but a win over Galway with probably more questions than answers, as the squad probably heading to Portugal for warm weather training. Liam and John were at the game. Liam, it was all dead rubber type of a game, wasn't it? I mean, to be fair, there was a good bit of football played somewhere from after the first 15 minutes until maybe before the last 10 minutes. It was just kind of a...
like a challenge match.
It had that kind of A versus B feel about it.
Yeah.
The crowd didn't get overly excited and the whole lot. Did Jack learn much?
No, but I'd say, look, Jack is happy that he held his Division 1 status, and they can go into their airplane now and head off to warm weather to do a bit of work. And I just saw the forecast today. Someone was saying that the rain, there's a lot of rain going to fall in Portugal and Spain, so it might be a warm weather camp at all. But look, it's a box ticked. We survived in Division 1, 10 points, 5 wins, 2 losses. A lot of questions, more questions than answers, I think, we have come heading towards the Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Did we unearth players? We'll go through it as the evening goes on. We did. A couple of fellas held up their hands. Like Killian Burke, I suppose. Joe O'Connor is on everyone's lips at the moment. I suppose. Look, I was at most of the games with Timmy and Ambrose on the radio and stuff like that. And no, it just didn't. There was something missing this year. Whatever it was about, it was.
The league in general was that way, though. I mean, this time last year, I remember we were talking about game after game and how competitive it was, and everybody wanted it and looked at it. It has failed, has it?
Well, it looks like that teams wanted to win 2 or 3 games and that's it then. You know, getting to the final wasn't a big deal. And it's a pity. You know, but even the night above in Dublin, and you know, even the first match against Derry above here, the atmosphere just wasn't, it never got going. Even, I know, is it the crowd or is it just the way the condensed season is now, is it really kicking in or what, but there was it, like we said, it never got going this year. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of questions for the team and about the way the league is run.
Yeah, and yet John Kennedy, if we had got a result against Derry, which we probably should have had, and if we didn't lose to Dublin by as much as we did, we could be in a Division 1 final.
We could, Donald, yeah. Do you know, and that was the league. I think that's the way the league was. Very disappointing. I'd agree with Liam. Do you know, it was that bite and that competitive edge wasn't there. We've said it for years that all the divisions were really competitive. But Division 1 this year, look, it was... there were drab encounters, being fair. There was no atmosphere. There was no excitement. And I'd agree with Liam. I think maybe it's the season. Like, you know, there's players playing with clubs right up to December. Mm-hmm. You're back in. You know, they'll say it's a McGrath Cup, but no one wants to take a break. And then you're into the league. you just look at the injury count.
Yeah,
overall,
a lot of
the
bodies
counties.
Breaking down now as well, yeah.
All
yeah.
the counties, yeah. like Galway yesterday, their team was a shambles, to be fair. Mm-hmm. Like, without being disrespectful, how Pádraig Joyce stayed in Division 1 with what he had. You know, he had 7 or 8 marquee players missing because of the injuries carried on between Sigerson, mm-hmm. National League, no break, playing at Sigerson on Tuesday or Wednesday, and playing National League. You can't do that, travelling up and down the country, going right into Championship now. And, you know, it's a... I think it'll have to be looked at again.
Mm-hmm. The whole split season project, I suppose, it probably needs maybe 2 or 3 years to be able to look into it and say, look, it's very easy to say after the first year it's working or not working. You need a longevity. But now you're asking different questions this year than you did last year about it.
Correct.
And we're asking the supporters as well. Like, you think back, like, the game in Killarney this year with Tyrone. Like, if Kerry were playing Tyrone in the last 4 or 5 years, like, you'd be talking 10, 12, maybe 13,000. There was 6,000 there. Same over in Roscommon, just under the 6,000. Now, the crowds, the people aren't coming out to watch the games. Now, our 2 home games we had in Tralee here. Now, a couple of years ago, we were hearing in Radio Kerry the week leading up, the tickets were sold out, and mm-hmm. that's gone.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a reason for that, and they'll have to find out why the reason is that. We probably all know why the reason it is.
We got a comment in about that, and I didn't kind of want to read it out, but has TV coverage taken away from going to games? I mean, before you didn't see it, you had to go, you had the radio, absolutely, but it wasn't like being there. But now you can see it, on replay, you can see it on Circular, you can see it all over the place. Social media has the goals and the points up if you never see a match. Does that have an impact?
It has. There's a couple of impacts. That's probably one of the biggest ones. The second one would be the cost of it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
No, because you're going from a club season where supporters have been paying to go in to watch their clubs and stuff like that, and then the game of football itself. Mm-hmm. Not very attractive at the moment. I'm meeting fellas every day, and that's the first thing out of their mouth. I met a fella today from Cork, yep. and he's not a big football supporter. He's more of a hurling man, but he said watching football now, he said he'd switch it off.
Yeah,
no, because he said he remarked about the old Kerry team, how they always play football, and I know it's different style, different eras, and all this kind of stuff. But they'll have to do something to make it more attractive for people to watch it.
Yeah. I think the Saturday night game in Tralee, it really caught the imagination before. Yeah. But it's gone to a farcical situation. Oh, people from North Kerry leaving home at 3:30 for a 7 o'clock game, and they're inside in the stand for 3 hours. I mean, with families, it's crazy on a winter's evening. Like, it's not, it doesn't entice people. And like Liam said, the games then, the cost, you know, it has to be looked at. But the quality of the football. Yeah. We're not criticising the teams. It's the system. It's the rules that we have, and it's the way the game has been played. Everyone wants to go on to see scores, high fielding. We saw it yesterday. Five or six long kickouts. Adrian Spillane, Barry Dan, Joe Connor, pull him down to the sky, gets the crowd going.
Yeah.
We're not seeing that anymore. Yeah. We're seeing a ball kick 13 metres, give it back again, you know, keep 10 passes and we don't even go forward, we go backwards. People won't go to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. Come here, people will have to go to see, because we have a lot of players on the fringe. Let's discuss some of the players on the fringe. I'll start with John Kennedy. Dylan Casey and Armin Heinrich, they've been around a fair bit now. I mean, they're not new to the job. Dylan Casey had his chance in the Championship last year. He's a player of decent quality. He's inside. He has a county championship with Stax. He captained them as well. Heinrich, young lad on the way up. Great with Tralee CBS, again, product of the Stax. How did they get on yesterday?
They did okay. You know, they did well. I mean, Armin went up and kicked a great point. Dylan, you know, he's playing with confidence. It takes time to adapt. And I think that's the positive thing out of the league, is these guys have come in. Will they start in the Championship? Maybe not. But they're going to put pressure on the guys that are going to go start, if they do. And you wouldn't be afraid to bring them in. They have the time, they have the game, they have the minutes under their belt. But, you know, Jack will be quite happy with those lads. Sean O'Brien as well. You know, he's fitted in well. He's an option for kickouts. He'll kick the score. You know, so it's a learning process. And these guys, certainly, they're in their own merit, and they've put their hand up.
Mm-hmm. 2 forwards that we've been following all the way through, Darren Roach and Killian Spillane. Liam, you've been a huge fan of Killian all the way through. A big enough game for both of them yesterday, because obviously it's the last round before the Championship starts, so they had to shine. How did they get on?
They did, yeah. Killian, you know, yesterday stepped up to the mark again, which we'd like to see more often. You know, that, I suppose that's the biggest critic that we would have with Killian, is, you know, we know he has it. We've seen him at club football for years and years. Can we get it more often out of him in the green and gold, because he's a scorer, and Dara's the same. You know, and what I like about him is they stay close to goals. they want to stay close to goals, and which was an interesting thing I saw was it today, that the way Armagh have set up now, they have five in the full forward line. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of coming back. I can see that from Kieran Donahue, because you'll start off with five in there, but we'll probably only end up with probably two in there with all the movement and stuff like that. With us, even at the start of the league, we had one in there and we had three or four defenders around David, so we're going to need more of a presence in the full forward line. And I do think the likes of Dara and Killian can do that role for us, because they don't like travelling down the field, and if they can stay close to David and pick up the breaking balls and pick up what David can win, because David needs assistance in there as well. And I think the two boys would suit that position down to the ground for me, because they're natural full forwards.
Mm-hmm. John Kennedy, Paul Gainey, Stephen O'Brien, I mean, obviously they own absolutely nothing to carry. They're kind of coming back in again. I mean, they've set out for most of the league. They had an impact yesterday.
Definitely, yeah. Do you know, I mean, Paul he's a leader. He knows his option taking is very good. He won't be shooting from impossible angles. He brings fellas into it and he'll kick the scores. Huge experience, fully fit Paul Gainey. He looks sharp actually. Mm-hmm. He looks very fit.
Good passer,
yeah.
He was very involved in linking play yesterday.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Traditionally he's the 15, he's at the end of the line, he'll take the score, he'll go for it. But yesterday it was more swift hands, more passing.
And it was interesting, he was in the 40. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes, you know, when you're losing that bit of pace inside in the corner, I'm not saying Paul is losing pace by any means, but when you're coming to the individual,
it was like
career,
Liam Brosson when he was losing pace
when you come to the into the corner, that's where you don't want to go.
It'd be very difficult to play in the corner. Liam, a tenacious corner back, that's that, but you have that bit of space outside, and a good footballer will create more space.
Yeah.
He'll lay off the ball and he's a great man to link.
Yeah, and he had a good judgment as well, Stephen O'Brien as well. Strange enough as it may seem, this might seem, we were cruising along in a game that I suppose we kind of wanted to win a little bit more than Galway did, or maybe we had a bit more quality. I think we were 15 points to 8 up. Then we kind of pressed the button, brought on the big guns, and the wheels came off, did it?
Did a small bit. Like, we were going all right.
We were going
and
all right.
And next thing, the three boys came down the steps together and on the field, and you know, I don't know, is it a mindset or what? Or I don't know what happens, but the wheels fell off the wagon a small bit, and the kind of... Are we just kind of looking at the boys and kind of saying, here we go, now he kind of do the rest? No, yeah. that can't be happening. But yeah, it was unusual, and I don't know. I didn't think we'd see the boys, to be honest. Yeah. I thought there was other guys on the squad there that more, you know, that you'd like to throw in yesterday and see.
Yep.
You know, give them games, like John said. Give them minutes under their belt and see how they get on. But look, the three boys came on, and
it was a bit too close for comfort at the end, to be fair.
It was, yeah, but that seems to be our league all year.
The last couple of games, I mean, Tyrone was the same. We faded out, yeah. And mm-hmm. We kind of faded out against Derry as well, maybe, since, you know, that we didn't put the pressure on at different times. But when we got level and we kind of lost the lead again, John, that has to be a worrying thing, surely, because I mean, is that a loss of concentration? Is it just guys going down through the gear saying, look, 'tis grand, we're not going to get beat by too much, or we're not going to get caught, or we have enough ahead? What is it? Or is it a mental thing? Or is it the fitness? Is it the training? Is for some reason, do they all kind of just go as far as 80% and then the engine switch off?
You've tipped a lot of boxes there, Donal,
right.
No, but in fairness, I think that they're all contributing to it. Do you know, fitness could be the work they're being doing, the mental side of it. You're 8 or 9 points up, no matter what team you're, what player you are, you'll just drop your guard, you'll try things. I think we got a bit casual. Yep. A few short kickouts didn't work. Mm-hmm. I couldn't figure it out why, because Shane Ryan had kicked a few boomers out the field, and
we were
Joe Connor, Sean O'Brien, Barry Dan, yeah. You know, we pulled down some great ball, and like, let them have it out there. But you know, in a game like that, Galway, they didn't know what was happening with Roscommon. If Roscommon were to get something, Galway had to get something in Killarney. Mm-hmm. So they were going to stay and go to the very end, limited with the quality of player they had. But look, they got the chance, and Tom O'Callaghan stuck the goal, and you know, it was a squeaky bum time, as they say.
It really was at the end. I mean, the ball going in. Let's look at some of the positives. Joe Connor, man the match. I mean, the game started 100 miles an hour. He had the ball over the bar after about 15 or 20 seconds, which was remarkable. He I'm slow to say he's defined, because he hasn't been found. I mean, he's been there. He had that horrific injury that took him out of all last season. And I suppose if you look back at it now, what a loss he was in that instance. I mean, what he can contribute. So he's coming back off an injury. He was the Kerry captain as well, of course. It must be pointed out. So he's not defined, but he's found himself back to where he is or where he was, or he's certainly getting up there again?
He's definitely coming back into the form that we all know that he can get to. No, he's a big scopey young fella, very athletic. He's tough, and what I liked about his game now is he's attacking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's getting scores, and this will be important at the latter stages of the year when we meet the likes of Dublin, because the likes of Fintan and these guys, they won't mark you unless you're going to be into the game,
mm-hmm.
and they'll stand off you. And above the last day, and I said this one or two times, it was the second half. Kind of Joe realised against Dublin that Jesus says, "No, I'm marking me here," and he went and he got 1-1. No, and he's pushed on since. And I do think, and even watching Barry Dan's body language yesterday, he was driving forward the whole time. You know, maybe with the last couple of years we were watching our midfielders and they were sitting around the middle and they were just kind of, you know, kicking the ball in and there was bodies inside and it was no good. At least now we have two guys, and maybe in three with Dermot O'Connor, that on a given day they can go forward and clip on a few scores as well, which, like I said, they have to be a threat.
Yeah.
Especially against the bigger teams.
Is that coming from the training pitch? Is that coming from behind in Cornes where they're trying to get an extra 10%, and I suppose Barry Dan, again last year, as well pointed out, he was on the bench more often than not. I mean, he might have even missed out on a wedding or whatever he was along the way to sit on the bench. But now he's getting his turn, and he's fully deserving of his turn. And the driving yesterday, and plus the actual fielding as well. I mean, he's bringing that back into the game as well. And you know, he's a fine man to pull a jersey to.
He is, yeah. And he can give a belt of a shoulder. He's, you know, and that's something we need around the middle of the field. You know, a bit. We don't need monsters out there, but we need guys that can.
You need disruptive.
They're definitely two guys, between Dermot O'Connor and there. I think we have a three there now. We're going to have two from them three for the rest of the year. Touch wood that they all stay injury free. But what I like about them is that we're starting to get scores from the middle of the field.
Yeah.
Like if you look at the big teams, Derry with Glass and Fintan and with Dublin, they're all kicking through two and three. And maybe you might even be getting, you know, 1-4 from the middle of the field from your two boys. And we need that as well in Kerry. Yeah,
they're scoring more.
Yeah.
John Kennedy, talk about the number three. Obviously, number three wasn't there yesterday, Jason Foley. There's a lot of jigsaw pieces to be put back together to fill that. Tig Morley in there yesterday. Done all right, but maybe not hugely comfortable, maybe.
No, and it's the first game back there again, Donald. And, you know, like we said, you take Tig out of six, there's a gap. He has that down to fine art.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe not so much early in the league, but he's only coming back. But when it comes to championship, Tig has played there. But Jason Foley is a huge loss. And if we do play Tig three for the start of the championship, you know, the makeup of the half back line will be very important, because I think, you know, it's well documented up the centre has been a problem for us.
Mm-hmm.
Tig started that problem. Jason's side was very sure. They're two all-stars, you know, but you put Graham O'Sullivan back into the mix. Brian O'Bickleek is coming back again, got a bit of game time yesterday, which is good. But I think three is going to be a problem spot for us, and if we put Tig back there, six will be a problem then.
Yeah. Is that the bigger problem, that we know Jason's out, people say, until the end of the Munster Championship? That's probably two games maybe, and then you can't exactly walk back into a quarter final having not played, because you know you probably need to get the fitness up and the whole lot. But does Jack just make one change, or does Jack have to make a number of changes?
That's a good point.
If you were a manager,
you'd make the least number of changes you can.
Yeah,
but it mightn't be possible in this situation. Has he already made number three? Don't think so.
Yeah.
And if you put Tig back, then who are you going to play six?
Yeah.
You don't play Gavin White there.
You're looking at players who's very flexible, you know, that can play in a lot of positions.
Do you change your defensive style then if you have a different six? I mean, Tig Morley has kind of learned that craft. Whoever goes in at six can't learn that overnight either. So do you go differently defensively?
You do, and I think this is where this training holiday comes into play, because basically these training camps in the warm weather, as we call it, you can walk through all this.
Mm.
Like, it's very hard this time of the year to be behind in curtains and you're walking through and you're talking and players freezing, you know, so there'll be a lot of this done out far. And I do think the likes of Graham, he's a cute enough footballer, but we need a six that'll hold.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need a six that's going to be driving up and down the field. I don't think Gavin White's our answer at number six.
No.
I think it takes away from his game as well.
Yeah.
And in fairness, Liam, Graham has been up and down the field for us. Like,
yeah,
he's popping above in the full forward line. You know, you're going to curtail his game as well. It's somebody that's going to play a negative game, play on the D and not move and keep that gap closed.
Worry about Tig Morley behind her.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to find somebody. If you have an idea about it, 0667123666, or you can text us on 083 300 3300. After break, we'll be talking to Dan Kearney and we'll be talking Ladies Football.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now the Kerry Senior Ladies football team are heading back to Croke Park to see if they can win back-to-back Division 1 National League titles after they secured their final spot, of course, with a win over Galway at Fitzgerald Stadium. Also yesterday, of course, it was part of the doubleheader. Dan Kearney was there to watch it. Dan, got over the line. We done what we needed to do, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. Did what we needed to do, and Darren Long even said it after the game. It was like a semi final, really. You know that the performance wasn't a huge factor. It was all about getting the result, and they did. You know, and in fairness, Galway put it up to them pretty well, like it must be said. And Galway, of course, fighting for their future in Division One for next year, but they came down and they really harried and they hassled Kerry and they came at them and everything. But in the finish, it was Kerry's quality really and quality off the bench again that won the game for Kerry, like, you know. And of course, Hen O'Donoghue's goal in the 50th minute, it made all the difference. Like, that put Kerry 3 points up, and you could visibly see Galway heads go down after that. And you know, Kerry maintained until the finish, and they went on to win the game. So, you know, good result, and back in the final on April 7th.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Of course, Hannah coming off the bench, scoring 1-2. Something that we'd normally say Louise Murray Hurtig was doing, but Louise started yesterday. She was well marshalled as well for long stages by Galway. The one thing that I noticed about Galway was that, of all the teams we've played so far, they were the first gang that kind of maybe had that more physical approach. Maybe they were certainly stronger.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I suppose, look, like I said, they were fighting to remain in Division One, and they're still there. They still have one game to go, a postponed game against Waterford, you know. And they're a pretty good side, and they were aggressive and they were physical, and you know, they didn't stand back from Kerry, and it was a great contest from a Kerry point of view that they got a game like that ahead of the National League final. But look, essentially, I suppose the referee left things flow as well, which was the right way to do things. Like, you know, there was some good tackling going in there that a lot of other referees would have called, but it made for a better game. Like, but in fairness, Kerry stood up to it. And like, the one good thing about it, like, really, and was that when the pressure came on Kerry, they responded. Because I suppose, look, they started like a whirlwind. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, they were 1-3 to a point up after 14 minutes, but then they didn't score again until the third minute of the second half. Yeah. So Galway rattled off 5 in a row. Like, so you know, in normal circumstances, you're kind of saying, Jeannie, where's the bit of inspiration going to come from here? But in fairness to Kerry, they stuck at it, and you know, sides were level a couple of times in the second half, and you know, Galway got 2 in a row then, and they levelled matters again, and then came Hannah's goal, and Kerry were able to, you know, they were able to move on from there and finish it out, like I said. But no, overall it was actually a very, very good test for Kerry. Like, and you know, the great thing about it is that Kerry will look back at it and say, we didn't play well. But isn't that ideal when you're coming into mm-hmm. a final? Like, you have loads to work on, loads to improve on. Like, so, yeah, look, Galway came with a plan and nearly worked for them. But no, Kerry thankfully came through in the finish.
Yeah, a bit more quality. Talking about quality performances, Kayleigh Cronin, I mean, she has blocking down to a fine art at this stage. Yeah. Huge moment there just before halftime.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think it was Shauna Hines passed into Aoife O'Rourke, and that was actually later on in the game, and Mary Ellen Muldrum made a great save. I was thinking of that one. No, but you're dead right. It was just right before half time.
It was when Nicola Ward was going in there and Rain again for the ball.
Yeah, and Kayleigh, she just threw her body in front of it. Just as she's done many, many times, and she just it was like a certain goal only for her. It was absolutely magnificent into the Lewis road, into the ground. What a player, though. I mean, what a player overall. I mean, she's kind of gone in at centre back there this year, with Emma Sherwood stepping out. So, and she's done an absolutely fantastic job, and like, she's kind of a character that never say die type character, and she's physical, she's strong, but she's a bloody good footballer as well. Like, so she's, I thought she was absolutely excellent yesterday, Katie Cronin, yet again, and she's a vital cog in this Kerry team, because like that, she has serious leadership qualities, and she kind of does all her talking out in the field, you know, but she is a serious player, and that in fairness that block just before half time was one of the big highlights of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, Mary Ellen Bulger's save, as you mentioned it there yourself, a massive save as well for the girl going back into goal as well. Dan, Armagh obviously knew they were in the final. Did they put out their D team or E team or F team against Dublin, or did they put an E team out as well?
I'd say they picked up a few girls after mass or something like that, you know.
Greg McGonagall now. Don't be doing that to the poor men. But there will be a serious threat in the final. I mean, to be fair to them, the only team that have beaten Kerry is Armagh. And I suppose, you know, the best two teams in Division 1 are in the final.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Look, I suppose, look, they made 9 changes for the game against Dublin, and Dublin really went to town on them. Like, I mean, Dublin were hoping that Galway would turn over Kerry, and that would have put Dublin in the final, but they really, you know, I mean, they still put 7 goals past them and kind of destroyed them, really. I don't know, was it 23 points or something like that in the finish, like. Mm-hmm. But look, they'll have their strongest team back again for the final. They won't fear Kerry, like, they've turned them over above an Armagh. Now, albeit Kerry had a number of goal chances that day that if they had taken, they would have come out of the game with a win, I feel myself. Like, look, Amy Macken was very, very strong that day. She's going to be a serious operator again. Kerry are going to have a plan to shut her down. And I'd say the best thing you can do with Amy Macken is stop the ball from coming to her. Out the field, yeah. That's the main thing, like, you know. But it's going to be a very, very good game, because they're two sides that like to play football as well, and the wide open spaces of Croke Park. So it's going to be a great contest, like, you know, and particularly, like, I suppose there's a national title on the line, and then down the road you have the Munster Championship in a few weeks after. Like, so it's great to be playing this level of football at this time of the year, really.
Mm-hmm. And it's great to be talking about the Kerry senior ladies going to back-to-back Division 1 titles, and I suppose very much on that vein, of course, that was a thing that Cork were doing night over night and year after year, all the way through for the last 20 years. But sadly, no more in Division 1 for Cork, relegated.
Yeah, Cork gone down to Division 2, yeah. Meath dished out a bit of a hiding to them again over the weekend. Look, it's kind of tough enough times for Cork ladies football. Of course, they've had a few retirements in the last few weeks, you know, some like the Sullivans and a couple of more players. Like, so, look, it's when you're losing that quality and the type, the player coming through isn't as good, it's very, very hard to maintain it. So, look, they're going to be rebuilding again. They're not the force that they were, and it's going to take them a while, I feel, to come back to anywhere near what they were in the past. Like, so, look, it's swings and roundabouts in a way. Look, Kerry are on the up, Cork are on the downward path. It's not the worst thing in the world, is it? You know, so...
the pendulum does swing, to be fair. It just takes a while for it to do it. Listen, Dan Carey, thanks very much. Obviously, you will have your Croke Park ticket booked way up there with the crows and the whole lot. You better bring extra gloves. It's quite cold up there. Absolutely, but it's great to be going up there. And we will check in with you maybe in 2 weeks' time. All going well. And if it's not going well, we'll still check in with you. And that, of course, was Dan Carey talking about the Kerry senior ladies winning in Fitzgerald Stadium, of course. A couple of comments came in about that, Liam, the game in Fitzgerald Stadium, the double header and the whole lot, and how fantastic it was, and there's thousands of absolutely fantastic things. It was a bit disappointing, though, the amount of people that ran out the gate, though. I mean, mother of God, like, I mean, here you have a team who's going, and you know, it's kind of funny, it throws it in. If the game had started before it, people would say, well, you know, they were coming to see the men's game, but you know, people kind of clearly exited the doors fairly quickly.
It is, and I suppose, look, the fellas that left, there must have been a reason why they left, but I suppose the bars, and they were thirsty, and heading down the town. But yeah, and it's a pity, because look, this is, like we said last week, this Kerry ladies team at the moment are probably one of the best Kerry ladies teams we've seen in a long time, And like we said, we've seen a lot of good ladies teams. Probably not, I was probably a bit young, John, and probably remember
that team. I was
probably singing songs. But they got over the line. It was all about getting to the league final, and I suppose they got to a league final with a lot of pluses as well. They've tried out a lot of players. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of names there now as well. The one criticism I suppose I had last year after the Ireland final was the bench and a couple of small things, and they seem to have improved in that. So it'll be interesting now with this Armagh again, because Armagh seemed to be like Kerry last year. They're coming in a high, and Kerry are probably up there now with the big teams, and I think it's important that if they could go to Dublin the next day and put on lay down the law and maybe come away with the title again, and that'll really put them up there for contenders for Dáil Éireann in again.
And Greg McGonigal, former Dublin manager actually, who couldn't get over that Greg Cork team for a number of years, former Monaghan manager, and while he was the Dublin manager as well, his second in charge was Davy Burke, and Davy Burke of course is with Roscommon now as well, so a lot of experience there as well. We'll certainly look forward to that game. A couple of comments coming in, lads. No disrespect to any Kerry player, but it's way too expensive to go watch teams operating at 50%. Weather and conditions have been horrible for the entire league. All Ireland final tickets can't be got the last few years, I'd imagine. No sellouts at Croker's. It tells its own story. I suppose that there's an element of truth in all that. Hi Dáil, I cannot understand what happened to the Kerry team. They seem to be afraid to kick long. Gavin does great runs taking the ball. I can't get myself to pay to go and see this horrible game anymore. When we started this show a couple of years ago, that comment would be maybe on its own, or there'd be one or two, but there's more and more people feeling that way about football now, and feeling that way. It's a big commitment to get into the car, to drive, and like you said yesterday, there was only three or four times, John, that the crowd kind of got entertained, and they were from high catches, they weren't from goals.
And it's not a Kerry thing.
Yeah, it's the condition of football. Is this why Eamon Fitzmaurice and all the brains of football exactly have to sit down and have to do something?
It's a tough job in their hands, to be honest with you, because look, it's all about winning at that level. And we've been at several games, Lee and myself, over the last number of years, and you'd say, after 20 minutes, you'd say, you feel like going home.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Like.
Yeah, but if you're a player, you go to win, you want your All-Ireland medal. I mean, there's nothing in the rule book that says I have to entertain you as well.
Oh, yeah.
I have to win.
O'Connor doesn't care what we say around the table here. Like, he wants to win All-Ireland. Yeah. It's the hierarchy that'll have to sort this out. It's not the chairman of the county board, or it's not the Kerry team. It's a big problem, because it's just not attractive.
When we see rule changes coming in, and it's like what I said earlier, it takes a while to kick on before we know whether it's a good rule or a bad rule. But the rules that were brought in haven't added to the attractiveness of the game, and we're always kind of tinkering at it and trying to say, oh, if you bring this in now, it'll be great. And the mark, for example, sure, I mean, people were jumping around the place saying nobody can high field, we'll bring in the mark, but it's destroyed the game in a sense, hasn't it?
It's destroyed. I mean, when you have a guy just kicking maybe 15 metres outside the 45, a punt pass into the chest, that's not what the mark was brought in for. The idea was good, bring it in, the idea at that time was
the midfielder, when he caught a great ball and he came down and three or four fella swarmed around him, that it was unfair. That was for the mark, not for a corner forward to catch a punt.
So Rob Finnerty yesterday caught two fairly handy balls ahead of Tadhg Morley.
Down at his knees, wasn't there, really?
He got 2 points.
If the mark wasn't there, Rob Finnerty would have to take on Tadhg Morley and maybe go for a goal.
Yep.
You know, so it took away that little bit of a spark as well from the forwards.
And several times, Liam, you'd see a wing back up there and he winning a mark when he could catch the ball and take it on, and he kicks the ball wide from the mark. I don't think he's improved the game, this mark.
I don't. It is concerning that Kerry are allowing teams back into games that they seem to have control of. They'll need to be more ruthless in the championship. That's from Charles out there in North Kerry. And a bit of a comment coming in here. We're going to read through it. Hi Dáil, it's always the same problems with Kerry. They don't take their points unless they're 15 yards from goal. The first half losing position and too many wides. They should have won by 6 or 7 points. They allowed Galway back into the game, and unless they start kicking points from 30 or 40 yards, they won't be going too far in this year's championship. They can't depend on the three boys to put the ball between the posts all the time. They left in a cheap goal and the goalie was out on the right hand side of the post. What was he doing there? Shane Ryan should stay in the goal post, and that's from Eilish over there in Tralee, just around the corner, I'd imagine. Yep, absolutely, Eilish, all your points are there. Can I just ask a question about the style of football, John, when you were playing it back in the day? Obviously, when people win, it's a great style and it's fantastic and the whole lot. And were people talking about the style of football that you were playing and saying it was great, or were people saying, God, it was much better in the 70s when Mick O'Connell was lording up and down the field, it was even better in the 50s when you look back? Has this been a cyclical thing that keeps changing, that people have this idea of what we should be doing, or when you were playing, was it truly the golden age?
Like, do you see, it's there was a lot of bad games in old time.
See, Liam, he won't say no, will he?
No, there was a lot of bad games in old time, Donald, too, and you'll see the golden years, even. Like, you'd close your eyes.
But
some
I suppose
of the passes
it was more one-on-one stuff.
Exactly.
And
you had your zone. You had your zone. Maybe Pat Spillane used to come back before his time. He'd be back around the half-back line. But you had your zone. It was man and man. And you beat your own man. And, like, when you did, you get it to the next line.
Did any team come along the time that you were playing and say, God, we can't take Kerry on 15 versus 15 and not try some defensive strategy, try anything at all? No team. Like, if Clare got an awful hiding off you a couple of times, Tip got a couple of hidings along the way, a lot of Connacht teams and Ulster teams got hidings along the way, surely some men during the 70s and 80s decided, okay, the next time we'll meet these now, we'll be tight, we'll be this, we'll be that. That never interested.
And I suppose Dublin brought it to the level, and then the Wire followed on. And like, they were a superior team in every way, football wise, but fitness wise, they brought fitness to. You know, it's not a lie to say that the Wire did 25 training sessions, 25 nights in a row, and like, this training was horrendous. But the team was super fit, and Dublin were. Cork were probably the second best team in the country at the time, or the third best. But that was it. But the standard was terrible. Like, I mean, you know, Munster, it was a cakewalk, as you said about Clare, with all due respect. There was no contest apart from Cork. You know, Leinster, all you Dublin and Meath, maybe in that time someone come from the North, Monaghan, did it one year. But look, it was poor. The standard was poor, but you had three or four exceptional teams, and that's the way it was. And it's something similar now.
Right. County League, poor, good, exciting.
A lot of it was the conditions were bad the weekend, Donald.
Pitches but there was heavy.
Yeah, pitches were heavy. A lot of tight games, a lot of draws out there, and you know, it's a good start. It's good for Team CB back playing again.
And we need good PROs too, don't we?
Oh yeah, to get the results out there. Yeah.
Did you hear about the PRO who had to come off the bench and score a point to get a draw?
No.
We'll talk to him after the break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, the County League got going at the weekend, and there was plenty of games played all over the county in all sorts of conditions and all sorts of pitches and all sorts of ways. Teams with 15 and some teams with 15 subs. My next guest on the phone, he was sitting there doing what most JPROs do. They'd be putting on the score and taking down the score and the whole lot. And lo and behold, he got the call to come on. And of course, we couldn't add the score anymore. But Matthew Sean O'Griffin got the call, answered the call for his club, and off onto the pitch. Matthew Sean, I presume you will have to give up the PRO job after this, will you?
Yeah, I don't know really. I feel like I'm doing my best to do both. To the hard one to tweet and play.
You didn't think of bringing the phone with you, no?
I debated it, alright, but I think the conditions now, the waterlogged field and stuff wouldn't
my van fell to take it off you. Come here, tell us what happened for the listener who's at home saying, what's all this about?
I suppose we're just, as a PRO for the club, we're trying to keep the people at home updated with scores and stuff, so you'll be tweeting away by right, probably not on the bench, of the updates and the scores and stuff, just to keep them up to date. And I suppose then I did my best, and I got the call in from Tom, the manager, to go on, and I kind of looked around and I said, Christ, what will I do now with? So I left the phone on the side of the field, hoping maybe one of the other lads would take over. But that unfortunately didn't happen, I suppose. And then there was a pause, I suppose, on our Twitter feed for a while.
were you ahead or behind when you went on?
I'd say we were ahead, if I'm correct, but I'm not entirely sure. I think we were. I'd have to go back and see where the break in Twitter was.
The score. And of course, you got a score as well, didn't you?
Is that
a rumour?
No, it's true.
It wasn't up on Twitter, was it?
It wasn't up on Twitter, so it can't be true.
surprisingly enough, it went between the posts anyway.
Good stuff. Come here, look, Liz Paul, we had him on last year. Of course, he won the novice. And I remember talking to the manager at the time, and he's saying how difficult it was to get a team out week on week, and God knows that the WhatsApp group maybe on the Friday before a match, and you might have 11 or 12 or 13 players. What's it like this year? Have you got decent numbers for the first game anyway?
Yeah, it is good. I suppose we have about, I'd say we had 20 maybe tagged off yesterday. Thereabouts, maybe 21. With three young fellas come in now this year as well, which is good. So they're pushing for their place on the team as well. One of them, Cian, was starting, and we had two of the lads on the bench as well. So there's always a bit of competition there at this time of the year, and it's good. Like, and you need everybody, really. Do you know, it isn't just the 15 that are starting. There's the lads on the bench as well that need to come on and, I suppose, do their part as well.
Absolutely, and of course it is Division 4, it's a tough enough division. The draw against Moyvan, I mean, that's certainly a good result.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, we could have won and we could have lost at the same time. I think we were up by 2 points with a minute to go, and they went up and got a goal, so we had to put the heads down and try gain something back. So we went up and got a point. Thankfully, I think it was Cormac O'Kinnaida got the point there to level it out, so at least we came away with something. So I think it was very important to get off at the start of the year with a win or with a point, you know, so at least we did that. You know, it's one box ticked, I suppose. It's better than the last anyway.
Absolutely, and of course you'll have to find either an assistant PRO, or you'll have to ask the manager, are you starting the next day, will you?
Yeah, maybe he just to start me, come up with some new system instead. I suppose Kevin or Cahill could be tweeting sometimes if she's available to go as well. And Tyge Evans, he was up here last year as well. He was great for the Twitter, for tweeting. So it depends on who's available, really. You know, everybody will help out where they can. So it's just my day, the last day to do it.
Yeah, sure. That's what club football is all about. Matthew, Sean, everybody helping out the best they can. Matthew, listen to the great story. Fantastic. Hopefully there's a couple more points in you before the end of the year as well. And the best of luck to Lisbon as well, playing in Division 4. And of course, best of luck to SD. I think they won it at the weekend. John?
Yeah, good start, Donald. Like, I know Tom Baker well. We came across him last year. Great passionate man. That's the reality of down those divisions, numbers tight. And, you know, we had a great start. We had three lads there, Mark O'Donoghue and Tommy O'Neill, Liam Lawler transferred from Beale, and we had Barry Shanahan from Ballydunho, and of course an exciting talent, Oisín Healy, his first senior county league game. He scored two goals. It was a great start, but look, it's 2 points, and like Matthew Sean said there, it's a box tick, but there's a long season ahead. Look,
geez, Liam, they sound like Man City.
We went into the transfer market all night.
I nearly went to tug up myself listening to that.
he might break the fair play spin. He might be docked 4 points or something. Come here, well, these are the stories. I mean, we had the County League on last week, obviously Division 1, everybody talks about that. The airport derby, explain what that is.
Yeah. That's a massive, it's like Sky Sports, the whole lot. Yeah, the airport is caught on fire. It's I suppose,
look, when there was no airport, what was it called?
We're both into the runway, so we're at the start of the runway and they're at the finish of the runway, so I suppose some genius came up with it some night.
It's a great name.
It's a great name for it, and it kind of has stuck on. And look, like Fireys and Corrie was never really a big rivalry, but in the last couple of years we've been meeting them more often, and it has turned out to be a bit of a rivalry, and of course maybe in a good name for it, the airport rivalry.
And of course you have to, Joe Wallace Park has to have the game Thursday night under lights,
So because I suppose across the board for everyone, pitches are so bad at the moment, but I think there's one of the core players has a bit of a stag as well the weekend, so fair play to Fireys, they've agreed to play the game, you know, so it's
get it done and play it. John, very quickly on that, I mean, there's people out there tonight struggling to get the pitch for their under-13s and under-15s. There's games being cancelled, minor games can't go ahead. Fields are in an awful state.
Yeah, they're in an awful state. And you know, on that, at the weekend we played Fireys away, the pitch was immaculate. But I'll tell you, the dressing rooms and the setup around it was absolutely top class. Great credit to them. It was like a hotel inside, and it's been fair, you know, clean, fresh, and well kept. And you know, it says a lot about a club when you see the dressing room. You see the surroundings. You know, then there's guys working here. But like you said, it's going to be a big problem on Donegal pitches, because unless it's an all weather pitch, you know, they're not playable now, and big problems.
You didn't concede a score when an airplane came over. That's a good trick in Cork. Cora. To know when the airplane is landing, the opposition looks up and then you might sneak a goal because it's a big novelty. So we have that little trick, so we try to plan for the airplane to land.
Ourselves and Ryanair and cahoots together, huh? A couple more comments, Donal. Tom O'Sullivan at six with Paul Murphy sweeping behind on front of Murley is an option. Lads, I think Mike Breen at six is the obvious one for me. That's Neil Ferreter from Donore and County Meath. Thanks for joining us tonight. Brendan in Boston. Hi lads, the Galway team put out yesterday didn't do justice for the players trying to make an impact on the Kerry management. Once disappointing league and worse, it will get now. Donegal are promoted. Donegal are back into Division 1. Brendan, to be honest, I think we should have allowed most of the starters to finish the game and see that they were able to bring it over the line. But all the Cliffords guys were more willing to have a pop at the target successfully. We'll need the Cliffords later in the championship. That's what we kind of touched on earlier without maybe putting it as good as that. Liam said he was surprised to see the boys coming on the field, but obviously they were on it. If you're a player and you know that you have a game to make an impact, and it might be your last game, obviously it is the last round of the league, and you're withdrawn at 40-45 minutes, are you kind of disappointed? Are you kind of saying, Liam, God, I wish I had more time? Or is this something that's discussed beforehand and people
like,
know?
No, if it's discussed beforehand, but I suppose players understand now that you do your bit for 40 or 45 minutes and it's not, like, it's, we all know it's going to take more than 15 players to win in Ireland. And but yesterday was kind of a game where I thought personally that you could have got more minutes in these fellas, you know, the lesser names under their belt, and it was a surprise to see the two Cliffords, because we were going okay. I would have liked to see more of like your listener said there. The other fellas were taking pops at the goals as well, and when the big boys come on, then maybe it's just like we said earlier, you just pass the ball to them and let them be doing their stuff. But it doesn't always work like that.
Yeah, Donal, Francis. Callan from Palace. Good evening, Francis. It's the style of play, Donal, that is wrong. I watched a bit of Kildare and Louth Saturday night. I turned it off. Brutal. Might I add, we're going nowhere with our style of play. Again, as I said, John, at the start of this two or three years ago, you might have got the odd comment about this, but it's regular enough now, isn't it?
Oh, it is, Donal, and you know, like, it's not so much our style of play, but like your listener said, it's the style of play that the teams are adapting. It's about getting bodies behind the ball, and it's keeping possession, waiting for the break. Do you kick the ball into a crowded area, you're going to lose possession, you mightn't get it back for 3 or 4 minutes. So that's why the committee is put in place. They have a difficult job. You know, we all can see what the problems are, but remedy those problems. And what will management teams and teams do then to come around those again? Because they always come up with something. But look, certainly it's league football. To contradict what we've said here for the last few years, I think this year was a damn squib. It wasn't pretty to watch. And hopefully the championship will improve, but I can't see much of an improvement through the Munster's campaign until we get to the knockout stages.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about one man, and we've only about 60 seconds to talk about Clare and Mark Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. I mean, God, we're talking about the Kerry hurlers losing, I don't know, 10 or 12 players. Clare football lost 10 or 12 players as well, and they were within touching distance. The two teams that beat him have gone up. That's fair
and
enough.
And a very good down team yesterday, like he played with. Yeah.
How good was that?
That's a huge achievement for Mark. You know, and not only that, he's looking like that he'll get to Munster final.
Yep.
You know, which will be a big feather in his cap as well. And he'd probably look forward to having a swipe off Kerry as well. You know, so that's once Kerry get over our near neighbours, Cork.
Don't start that.
And maybe Limerick will start all over again. But no, I think Mark will be very happy so far with the way the year has gone for him.
Yeah. And it's a huge result for him. I mean, because they won 5 games in a very competitive division. Trying to get back, of course, obviously, to think, but you're with the likes of the Downs and the Westmeads and the whole lot. And the other team that left him go, Limerick, were relegated.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Mark has done great work, and his management team, fair play to him. He put his hand up. It was a lot easier not to go to Clare because there was an exodus of players. Yeah. Colin Collins was gone. There's always a rebuilding.
Because they were in a high.
They were in a high.
Yeah.
He did a brilliant job. And look, he went to the last day playing a team that were promoted. It was winner take all, and he can look forward to the championship now. They're in the Sam Maguire. You know, he's done a great job.
Fair play to you. League over. didn't get us to the final, lads. Yeah, we're having to get better pundits.
A bigger push.
Bigger push.
You're still talking to everyone, though, are you?
We're talking to everyone. I know everyone talking to us.
We'll have to get you a bigger jacket, lads. After a break, we will be talking hurling, mothers and others, and we will be talking Ross the Moon. And if you want to get a comment in, 066 712 3666, or text us on 083 300 3300, and we'll get your comments after the break. Lads, listen, thanks very much for the great efforts this year during the league. You'll be back for the Munster Championship, of course, which is just around the corner. But for now, we'll go to news.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, Skellig Rangers GAA Club, a big football club back there in southwest Kerry, they're going to host an exhibition match between the Tipperary Club champions Kildangan and the Limerick Hurling champions Napiercig in Portmagee in South Kerry. And the game, of course, will take place on the 20th of April. And it really hit my, I suppose, notice when the line went up that it was going to be the first hurling match in South Kerry in over 60 years. And even that, I'd say, could be debated, because hurling isn't really a strong hold back there. Delighted to have Declan O'Donoghue on from the Skellig Rangers Club to maybe chat through it. Declan, where does an idea like this come from? I mean, most people go to the Dogs or have Lotto or have whatever, but I mean, this is truly a very exciting idea.
Yeah, it's definitely different. It raised a few eyebrows, all right, when it first got knocked around a bit. But look, I suppose, like, you're sitting there watching Dragons Den, you'd say, how did they come up with these ideas? It just came to us. There's a group got together there. There's been a new executive formed, and it's headed up by Mark Conway there. He's the chairperson of the club. And just in the first meeting, discussion started to happen about, you know, future redevelopments, a long-term plan for development, and of course, what do you need for development, even in the with the previous speakers there talking about pitches and such things. So, you know, we started talking about fundraising, and that's where the idea started, really. We just got in front of a whiteboard and put up a lot of different ideas, and there was nothing off the table. And I kind of always wanted to see a hurling match down here. My mother's a Tumivara woman, so I grew up with six uncles and six aunties drilling hurling into me. So I always thought it'd be nice to see a game, and bingo, that's kind of where it all started. And we did our homework first before we brought it to the executive. We knew we'd have to have a good case in our hands, so we made a few phone calls, and the TIP champions, and actually Crota, in fairness, were doing everything they could to try and be part of it as well. But just with fixtures being a dual club, it was quite difficult. So we spoke with Napiercig, and they jumped at the chance. So they're actually all going to use, both clubs are going to use it as their kind of a pre-season getaway for their players as well. So it's a win-win for everybody at the moment anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, look, you're talking about big names. I mean, Limerick and Tip, I mean, they're the premier of hurling elite, I suppose, this level, and they're the teams at the higher end of that market inside in their county as well. So a lot of these players either have had experience maybe dropping back, I suppose, to the club, or certainly on the cusp of maybe getting back into county panels or playing at minor level as well throughout. So between them, there's a lot of talent on show.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, there is both counties will be involved that weekend, so probably won't have their county stars on show, but nonetheless, even the two gentlemen on the line officiating are highly decorated players with All-Ireland medals, Shane O'Neill and Gary Egan as well. And but, you know, Kildangan now in the last couple of years have really started to show up and become a big player in a very, very competitive county in Tipperary. And of course, Napiercig there have William Donoghue and Peter Casey and Conor Boynald on the current panel, and a fierce talent throughout. I mean, it's going to be a great match, for sure. You know, we're any game down here would have been fantastic, but they really are two of the elite clubs in the country, in fairness. So, and you know, speaking to both managers individually, there's an excitement in their voices. Like, they're looking forward to the challenge in pre-season to be playing such a good team, you know, each side, hearing that from both managers. So, yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be a great day. We want this all rain to stop now, like every other club.
You'll have to cut the grass some bit, will you?
We will. Look, don't worry. There's fierce delegating going on, and there's a great spirit behind it. Look, we're realists. We're definitely have the child of Prague is facing towards Park Limerick at the moment. We're doing everything we can. But look, you have to drive on with these things. It's greater the risk, the greater the reward sometimes. And with the help of God now, we'll get a few good weeks. And I was even on it was about 5 in the morning this morning, I was on the AccuWeather, and it was showing me a blue sky for the 20th of April. So a lot of thought and energy is going into it. So with the help of God, it'll all work out. It'll be great for the area. Something new, something a bit different.
I think it's a brilliant idea. Come here, Declan. Tell us a bit about Skellig Rangers. Obviously, All Ireland winners 2009, so Kerry Club. But for fellas listening in this evening, I mean, Portmagee, where are you? Maybe give us an idea of the club at the moment. You said you're under new management with Mr. Conroy as well. You know, so it's exciting times as well on that, especially when a new board goes in. You have new ideas, you want to kind of maybe roll things along as well. How are things going that direction?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously, like a lot of places, we're very rural. We're right out here in the edge of the peninsula, and we are, you know, we see a lot of our fantastic young players heading off there and playing now in Australia and Dubai and different places and over in America, and more power to them. Like, but you know, there's a great group of lads here, a lovely young club. Players showing up there, a massive turnout to their first session after Christmas. Declan Aries, the manager of the team at the moment, and he's got a good group there, and you know, they're enjoying it so far, as we know. Mark is actually the new chairperson then, and there's a new executive as well. But look, like a lot of things in a small place, you're kind of moving around from job to job. The volunteering is that's a great initiative, and as I said, everyone's showing up and doing, like even last week now, I think you mentioned it, Donald, you saw the video there that was put out.
Fantastic.
That was, again, like everybody just came up. There was Ian O'Connell from the O'Connell's food store there in the village. He was getting on the phone. Nobody had an opportunity to say no. They came out, put together a wonderful video as well. So look, there's a great club spirit. There's a fierce community spirit here down in Portmagee. And the Skellig Rangers made up of Portmagee and the Glen, St. Finian's Bay. People would know it with the chocolate factory and things over there, and looking out at Skellig Michael. So there's players, you know, it's a club. We play on our own. There's under 7s and 9s, 11s, and then from 13s up to 17s, we're joined with St. Michael's Filemore, and then at senior level, we're on our own again in the County League Division 4, and they play the Junior Championship, and of course the South Kerry Championship as well later in the year.
Absolutely. Listen, you're a fantastic club back there, like all the, I suppose, the small clubs along the coast, trying their best to keep going and the whole lot. The money that will come in from this, and undoubtedly, I mean, it's a fundraiser at the end of the day, that's going to help bring the club and secure the club even further into the future.
Yeah, look, with more things coming up throughout the year, but look, I suppose the fundraising department or committee or whatever you call it, subcommittee, like, it's this Skellig Rangers, this whole area is about, you know, 6 miles by 2 miles as the crow flies, and you have the same houses, the same businesses all the time. So I suppose our modus operandi was, let's put on something. If we're putting on events, let's try and do something that will give people a really good reason to, you know, to go to the event, whether it is this or something else we'll have coming on later in the year. This club has put on an event a few years ago called Hell Mountain, and it brought people from all over Ireland, and it was a huge success. And again, local businesses, you know, gave us materials and time and machinery, and landowners gave their land, and all the players and families got stuck into making the obstacles. It was like a tough mother event. And, you know, they're always willing to do something different. Our club secretary, Aideen Sullivan now, herself and Paula Brennan, and then they had, I think it was nearly 10 years of a ladies' football blitz here to raise money for cancer services in Ireland. So it's a small club. We're way back, as I said, at the end of the peninsula, but they're always doing things, you know, that really creates a great buzz in the place. And I suppose this Hurley match now is kind of another example of that. So hopefully it goes well for everybody and all of our visitors as well. You know, we're going to be bringing just 64 players coming, so that's a nice little injection into the local economy as well. They're up for it too, and you know, it'll be interesting for them as well, talking to the two managers. They're normally going to be in a game where they have both sets of supporters, but probably the majority of people will be neutral. So I think, you know, it'll be a different type of atmosphere for them, players as well, to be playing in that type of an event.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I can't wait. Saturday the 20th of April. Hopefully you get a couple of fine weeks on the way up to cut the grass down, Declan. I presume normally the footballs get stuck in the boat behind the goalpost. There'll be a good few slitters lost, I'd say. Will there?
These are all things that are currently being debated now. If you book them, they'll come. But yeah, look, there's a committee involved with the nets, involved with the lining of the pitch, cutting of the grass. They're going to try and find a weather machine now. You know, no stone will be unturned. We need to get a heated pitch maybe or something. But yeah, look, we're definitely planning for all contingencies as best as we can. And look, as I said, I went around Carcavine the last day putting out posters, and I started getting people giving me poems that about a game, a camogie match their grandmother played in. Some, there was clippings and newspapers being brought out about a game from the 17th of May 1957. Mm-hmm. About
over in Filemore, actually, it was. In Kells.
Oh, in Filemore, yeah, that's right. Of course, so there's loads and loads of stuff coming out of the woodwork here about hurling. So look, who knows? It might be the start of something.
But absolutely, almighty. Who knows? Skellig Rangers, County Hurling Champions 2030, huh?
Listen, it's one thing to have the exhibition, I know, but we'll see how we go after that.
Listen, Declan, thanks very much for joining us this evening. It was fantastic to catch up. Great club, Skellig Rangers. Keep up the good work back there. And if you want to have a look at that game, of course, or travel down to South Kerry, it's on Portmagee, of course, 20th of April, Saturday. And you can check out their social media there, Facebook and the whole lot. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, one of the big questions coming out of yesterday's game, of course, was Jason Foley. Is he, where is he, how is he, the whole lot? But after the game, Jack O'Connor spoke to Jonathan Higgins and he gave all the answers.
Jack, I suppose a lot of talk in the build-up of this game was about your team and what was on the line, but you must be so proud of the fight your side brought.
Yeah, we were happy enough with it. About the middle 40 minutes of the game, you know, we started, I thought, lethargic enough and allowed Galway to kind of dictate the first 15 minutes. I thought we got the grips of it then coming up to half time, and first 20 minutes of the second half was good again. But we just got a bit careless then at the end, and obviously the Galway goal gave them a bit of life and was a bit more uncomfortable, I suppose, than it should have been.
Is it a difficult challenge in the build-up? I know you're so vastly experienced, but at the same time, you know, a lot of talk about you and the merits of the league, and did you want to be in a league final? Could you make a league final? Is it, and against Galway, who are fighting for their lives, does that make it a difficult challenge?
Look, we had a fair idea this morning. We weren't going to reach a league final, you know, so it was just about performing and, you know, working on a few things that we've been going after. So I thought by and large we were good enough with that. As I say, just got a bit careless and a bit scattered there near the end. And to be fair to Galway, no, they showed good spirit. They kept at it. They're down a lot of players, as we are ourselves, you know. I'd safely say, you know, that we were probably down seven or eight fellas who would contend to start. I'm not saying they'll start now, but could be in contention to start, you know, in our team. So look, both teams were down men. I suppose a bit of home advantage helped us.
Your midfield, when you took control of that, I thought it was led by your two midfielders. I thought they were exceptional.
Yeah, Joe O'Connor had a big game. Yeah, Joe has been going really well for us, has a great league, and Barry has stepped in there in Dermot's absence and done a great job for us. So kudos to both of them.
The update, I suppose, the big talk coming in the build-up as well was the injury to Jason. How bad is that? He going to be? Is there any sort of time frame?
It's a nasty injury and it's going to take time. Ligaments take time to heal, so looks like you won't be seeing him for the foreseeable future.
And lastly, quickly, you're going off in a training camp, I believe. What's it going to give you an opportunity? More time to get, I suppose, hands-on time with the team and try out different things?
Yeah, it's been a tough league training-wise because the weather has been poor and it's hard to do any kind of technical work when you have weather like we've had for the last 2 months. So, you know, just hoping that we can get out there, you know, have some good training, proper time to go through stuff, technical stuff, and come back with good energy in the legs.
Bit of sun as well will surely help the legs.
Yeah, sure, that's never any harm.
Yeah, bit of sun's never any harm. Afterwards, Jonathan's also spoke to Patrick Joyce.
Patrick, I suppose, first things first, a bit of a crazy finish. I think we all catch our breath. What's the emotions after that?
Look, I'd be disappointed, Jonathan, with the performance and disappointed to lose the game, but on the flip side is you're a bit relieved as well to stay in Division 1. I think Galway have been really, really, really well to stay in Division 1, you know, based on the panel of players available to us. We've a lot of rookies in the squad that's got a lot of game time to keep us ticking over, and look, it's delighted to still survive Division 1, but with a couple of good performances, a couple of poor performances, we know we've a lot of work to do to get talked about later in the year, you know.
When you kind of take a step back in motion, obviously it's disappointment losing the game, but in a weird way, is it a kind of very satisfying for you, the fact that you've had so many injuries but new players have stood up and ultimately kept football?
100%, Jonathan, yeah. But look, like these lads have got game time, you know, that they learn so much from the games anyways, from having played against the Kerry, the Dublin, the Mayos this world, you know, and like they'll get invaluable experience from that, you know. So look, they now know the level that they have to get to individually, and the big thing from them is that they start getting consistency in their performances day after day after day. So look, we know where we're at. We've a lot of work to do, and we start with London and 2 weeks' time.
Is that target one kind of ticked off the box in a weird way?
Yeah, it is, to be honest. It's just to survive Division 1, because we knew these injuries were going to be long term at the start of the year, but we were obviously trying to fight it week to week and not get too much said about them, you know, because I'd always like to worry about the players I have, not the players we're missing, you know. So yeah, it was a good tick one straight away. Yeah,
I suppose another positive, getting Liam Silk back, you know, you can see how quickly he reads the game so well a couple of times, I thought.
Yeah, look at it, we agree with the medical team that he gets his 55-60 minutes, that'll be it, so we didn't want to try him any longer than that, because if he gets fatigued and he's come back from a hamstring injury, we had to mind him, you know.
A little bit of a break now before London, and a different challenge continues now.
Yeah, we've 2 weeks for London, but look, it's a great 2 weeks to get a bit of work done as well. Like, so look, we'll take a few days off, we'll regroup next weekend, and we'll get ready for the championship.
Thanks, Warwick. See you in London.
There we go. That's Pundit Joyce, of course, and he is looking ahead to everything. We'll take a quick break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Blood Upon the Rose comes to the INEC Killarney on July 12th and 13th. Set during the 1916 Easter Rising in Dublin, this fabulous musical by Jerry Cunningham tells the tragic love story between Joseph Plunkett and Grace Gifford and his subsequent execution in Kilmainham Jail. Tickets from £39.65, available from the INEC box office. Blood Upon the Rose, July 12th and 13th at the Glen Eagle INEC Arena. The Rising is coming to Killarney.
This is Anne Doyle with an urgent appeal for UNICEF. As traumatised children in Gaza stare down the barrels of guns, mortars and tanks, another threat looms. Famine is hurtling towards them. UNICEF is rushing food to hungry children in Gaza, but much more is needed. UNICEF will not give up on the children of Gaza, and I urge you not to either. Please visit unicef.ie and help save a child's life today. Thank you.
Enter the Virgin Media Playhouse for unbelievable value from Ireland's best broadband. Get 500 meg super fast reliable broadband for just €35 a month for 12 months. Switch in-store or at virginmedia.ie. Virgin Media, it's playtime.
T's and C's apply. See virginmedia.ie. Subject to location and availability. New customers only. 12-month contract. 500 meg broadband. €70 thereafter. Ireland's best broadband awarded by Umlaut. See virginmedia.ie/proof.
This Tuesday on Talkabout, don't miss beauty expert Mary O'Donnell for The Beauty Spot in association with CH Thamal Tralee. She'll be bringing you all the latest news from the beauty industry, testing some of the latest products and treatments, plus answering your questions. So if you like to take care of your face and body, don't miss The Beauty Spot this Tuesday on Talkabout, with thanks to CH Thamal Tralee, your one-stop beauty spot.
From the sidelines to the stand, Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, it's hard to believe it's this time of year again when the Dernan Ross Moon takes place, and we're a week out from it. Of course, it's been the race, I suppose, that has launched, I suppose, countless careers, I suppose, for domestic riders, international riders, and all the way through, particularly in Irish history. I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Cathal Moynihan, who was the last winner of last Kerry winner, of course, of a stage. Mikey Breen, 1978, absolute legend from Beaufort, even though he did ride with Killarglen CC, so we'll see how that went down with him. And of course, John Breen, the race director, who was here last year. John, you obviously done such a good job last year that they kept you again this year.
Yeah, they kept me here for another week anyway, so
yeah. And you're doing a little bit more work this year because you have an extra stage snuck in there.
Yeah, we've a new concept this year. It's a team time trial, which is kicking off proceedings. It starts in Cora on Good Friday, and it's a new dimension. I think the riders are very excited by it. It'll put somebody in a yellow jersey probably by fractions of seconds maybe, and it will be a target for someone to chase in right from the get-go on the road race stages then. So,
and for those of you sitting at home now talking football and saying a team time trial, that's where every person on the team has to cycle the same length of distance for as long as they can, then maybe somebody gets detached at the end, but so many have to finish together to get a certain time.
Yeah, the team time goes on the third rider over the line, so it doesn't matter, you know, there's no point to rider having a solo effort out in front. He has to work within his team, and you know, a lot of people might know, they think cycling maybe is an individual sport. It's totally a team game, you know. All these teams are coming here with a team ethos, and that's going to be very important from the get go. Mm-hmm. And they'll recognise squad involvement and even team selection heading into the weekend.
Yeah, and of course that's the first stage on the early morning side of it. They have a second stage, of course, that day as well, leaving your own hometown Castle Island, and you're send them up the mountains to Knocknagoshal.
Yeah, we're heading, before we get to Knocknagoshal, we have to hit the Black Panks and down into Bruss, and then we head left onto the Cork Line, Fields Bridge, five laps of the O'Leary Cross and Headley's Bridge Circuit. And then I think we have a spectacular finish lined up on the fifth time. They'll turn right up through Main Street, Knocknagoshal, and I've already know that the village is decorated already. School have made a big effort there, and it's going to be a very exciting finale. Probably something more akin, you know, that you would see in the continent, hill up through the village, and it'll take a very good man to win.
It is that kind of Patrick's Hill out of Cork, kind of where you head up to the village, and I suppose you'll have the kids are probably aren't as cool, are they? But they'll be all up on either side, the footpaths and the whole lot. And that's the second stage, which is exciting. So obviously, maybe some guy that might have had the yellow jersey starting off mightn't have it.
Yeah, because there'll be totally different stages. There'll be contrast, you know, to test the speed maybe in early in the day, and then obviously the tough finish and even a tough start to the stage with the Black Banks, and it could be, you know, the race could be turning his head there, like already you could have two different yellow jersey holders, or maybe not, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And
as a race director, are you looking to build up that excitement in the way the race is done? Are you sitting at home by night saying, "Grind, we'll put this little bit in, hopefully we'll lose half the field or whatever it is, the peloton," or are you trying to make it difficult, are you trying to make it raceable, are you trying to bring them all along at the same time, are you catering to the crowds as well maybe?
I think you listen to people is the key thing, you know, and you're not trying to lose anyone. I mean, you're trying to keep everyone in the race as long as they can, but you know, it's keep the integrity of the contest and keep it so sporting, and riders, you know, generally like love to see a very hard race. You probably didn't get the best winner, and again, look, it's something that we did ask a few teams and riders about it, and they were all excited about it, so then we went ahead with it, you know.
Yeah, stage two now for me would be an awful drive, never mind a cycle. Starting in Killarney, heading back over to Clarglen, heading down through Glencar up Blockachie in that direction, and all the way around to Sneem.
Yeah, it's a brutal stage, and it's been described as one of the best stages in Ireland, and because, you know, Ballacachine obviously is so spectacular, so tough. Even before that, up to Lockie Coos and all that, you have a tough drag up there, and then if that isn't enough, after Waterville, you're onto the Rainkerry and Cumacista, and another climb back in Tehillah, back John Egan country, you have another climb there in the Loop in Sneem. And again,
that's a slow drag actually from the Black Shop out. I mean, it looks flat, but God almighty, it is.
It's a very hard route.
A drag of a cycle all the way through.
Yeah.
So obviously, you're certainly trying to burn something off after stage two, and you, to be fair. Stage three, are you heading across the border slightly?
Heading across the border, yeah. And then we briefly, and then we come back into Kerry, and we returned into Cork for the finale. It's based in Mill Street. It's being hosted by the Sleeve Lucre Club. Who actually designed the route, Tony Kelleher and Tim Murphy and Anthony Tankard. They're the great cycling volunteers over there. They came up with this route, and it was absolutely spectacular last year. Dara Feely, who won the Ross Salton in 22, he described it as the hardest day he ever had on a bike.
Oh.
Again, you know, stage two maybe on paper looked harder last year. Stage three, and Carl might attest to this, was an absolute brutal stage, and it provided a great finish.
Yeah, and of course you finish as always up the hill in Killorgan after a couple of laps.
Yeah, three big laps in Killorgan, 10 smaller laps, and up the on the famous Donald McKenna circuit, up finishing on the hill in Killorgan. It's never over till they come up there 10 times. It's just a serious finale. It's probably the best theatre-like finish of any cycle race in Ireland. Again, I mentioned Knocknagoshal being like maybe continental style. Killarney certainly is. It's a great buzz around the town. People, you know, anyone that travels to see it that day, they see so much. See the riders, like, from first to the last finisher, the effort they're putting in. They might have seen it once or twice over the weekend and didn't get back, and, you know, to really see it all happening there. And it's always high drama in Killarney.
And then you can finally sit in the couch then for a couple of weeks.
That's it.
It sounds exciting. I mean, it's fantastic, and it has grown. And of course, but you mentioned the word integrity. And of course, there's a huge integrity in the race, because you're talking, it didn't happen 5 years ago or 10 years ago. There's a massive history. Is it nearly 70 odd years or even longer? 1978, we had a home winner, Mikey Breen from Beaufort. Did you know how big it was at the time when you were crossing the line at the very end?
I did. Long.
It was a prestigious race, even then.
You don't take as much for the when you, a year or two after you realize it, really.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you fall into cycling? Where did cycling come?
I was 18 when I took up cycling. I used to play football with Beaufort, and I gave up football, and John Mangan. I got involved with John Mangan then. And we used to go training every Sunday. In 1973 I started.
Yeah.
And we used to go out cycling, and that's how it all started from.
And of course, there is an element of a lovely little history around Killorglin with cycling. I mean, particularly at the highest level, even going back through the Ross and Kerry were good and strong, and even going back to Carstavine, there was Mick Murphy there as well. So there has been a good history of cycling.
Well, there has in all the years, yeah. We had Gene Mangan first, John then, and his brother Dennis, and Pat Healy, and I kind of came in after them.
You were left in then, being a Beaufort man.
I was.
You must have been quite good to get into the Clarkin Club being a Beaufort fella.
Well, I thought we were a bit naive, really, and I was a bit of good company anyway. So
yeah. What were the early races like for you? I mean, you said you were 18. I mean, was it a case that you were just cycling and training for ages, or
no,
was it kind of a race fairly quickly?
I bought a bike, I started cycling. It was novice and junior at that time. My name was novice and junior. I was no under 14, 16 or that in my time in 78.
You went straight in with everybody else?
Yeah, I went straight in, yeah, at the deep end.
Talked about 78, obviously people talk about winning it and it's fantastic to win it, but can you remember the various stages all the way through?
I can really.
Did you go in thinking in 78, Christ, I could win this?
I didn't, only the first day. The first stage was 80 miles. It started in Kentucky on my way out around Cork, and I just went after 2 miles, and then Bobby Power joined me, and then John Mangan and Pat Healy came up, and we were away then for the day of the fallers. Well, I was in good company with them.
Yeah. Did you have to work with the three boys?
They'd
make you work, obviously.
Oh, well, I didn't. I worked away because
it helped you as well, of course.
It helped me as well, yeah. Yeah. I'd rather be working anywhere than sitting, because you're going down and rotated, and
sitting and
ball game.
Did the four of you come in on the stage together at the end of it?
Oh.
What happened?
Bobby Powell jumped John Mangan. No, John Mangan tried to get rid of Bobby Powell and he couldn't. And then I jumped and Bobby thought I wouldn't have tried.
Why did he lift you up?
He left me go, and then I see the green, I see the jersey coming. Then Mangan and myself came to the line together, and Bobby was third with Pat Healy forward.
Oh.
We were away for the day, like.
And when you got across the line that evening, and you were about, where did you finish? In Kentork somewhere? No,
Kentork,
yeah. Was there a phone call home to Beaufort to say, Jesus?
No phones that time.
Was
no.
Did anybody know how good you were, how good that stage was at home?
Well, we used to come home that time because there was no B&B. We used to come home from the stages and back again in the morning.
Christ, so you came home with your good news?
I came home with a good. Well, I didn't know. I didn't take the what they call it that day. John Mangan won the stage, and
okay.
I was second. Bobby was third. It was kind of towards the end of it in the time trial. I was third in the time trial then.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when did you get into yellow?
On the third day.
We robbed it in the last day.
Yeah.
Probably the best day to rob a yellow jersey, isn't it?
It is, really. It is. Yeah.
It was out of it. What was it like when you'd realise, God almighty, you know, they're going to put this yellow jersey on me, you know, the little 18-year-old who decided to start cycling as a hobby?
That again, when you're young, Donald, you don't take as much. I was only 22 that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, I just took it for kind of granted, really. I was just, as another race, really.
Yeah. And of course, that time, I'm presuming, I don't know, of course, I'm probably going to fishing more than anything, but we're talking about the Sean Kelly, Stephen Roche, Aaron, and all guys like that. Did they come through these races, or cyclists to their equivalent coming through them?
They were coming through that time. Roche, the following year, Roche won the races. That he was only 18 that time, Stephen.
Wow.
You
had a race in the same peloton across the country?
I did, in Ross. I raced the Ross with Stephen Roche, yeah.
Yeah. Was there much known of him at the time? Was he just another cyclist in between?
The Super came along just at 19. He just came along and just... I rode. I was in a break with him the following day in it from Westport, and same as he was just sitting in a rollers.
He just took off.
Under no pressure.
Wow.
No. Super.
Isn't it amazing? And when you're sitting at home then a couple of years later and you see him winning the World Championships and winning all this stuff and you're heading back to Buffer and saying,
right,
God, I used to cycle with him. Do people say, or you did not, or are you saying, I'm really proud of the sport?
Some people, the people that'd be on the bikes would say that you did cycle with him and
yeah,
pulling brakes with him, and which I was once or twice, and yeah.
But it's massive. Like, I mean, it's funny because we're talking about cycling, we're talking about Kerry. Obviously, everybody talks football, and football is up there at a different level, and people try to hurl and the whole lot. But it's a sport that has such an international impact all over the world. I mean, you could have this conversation now with an Italian, you could have it with a Polish person, you could have it with an Australian person, and they would realise what a massive achievement 1978 Ross Moon winner was.
What was that time, only? Yeah, because, like I say, that was... That was different areas, like we had Killarlin and you had Castle Island and places, you know, you had good cyclists kind of all over that time.
Was there any good cyclists over on this side of the country?
In Tralee?
Yeah.
Oh, there was Hallam, was actually there in 78 year, I won it. Anthony Hallam and Cahal Mine, of course, after that again.
Yeah.
You know.
Carl Moynihan, when you're listening to a guy like this just rolling it off and he said, ever sure we won it and we got away in the break and shit was very easy.
It was very easy.
It doesn't sound very, very easy altogether. You're the last Kerry stage winner, so obviously it's not that easy.
Yeah, and that's a decade ago now, so I suppose we'd be hoping for a new Kerry stage winner very soon, hopefully.
Yeah. Come here, your own transition to cycling, obviously you could have come through maybe at the underage, he was running with the big men, or how was your transition?
Mine was a bit different again.
You came out of a boat, didn't you?
I came out of a boat and onto a bike.
Right.
I was an international rower. I started rowing initially with Muckross Rowing Club in Killarney, where I'm from. And then I was an international rower, and I suppose...
And you're very modest, of course. You're 2008 Olympian as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I suppose that was the pinnacle of it. I raced in the Beijing Olympics in 2008. We finished 10th.
Which was a massive achievement.
Yeah, and a few years later then, I transitioned to cycling, maybe around 2011 or 2012.
Mm. Did you, as an elite sports person, of course, did you transition to cycling because you needed another sport, you needed to be competitive somewhere else, this was something you could do, or is it an easy kind of transition?
Yeah, it is. Well, I wouldn't say it's easy, but would say cycling and rowing, they, you know, they complement each other well. You know, they're both... sports that reward hard work. Mm-hmm. And you know, I wasn't going to shy away from the hard work on the bike. I suppose, you know, initially I was in Killarney, and it was actually around the time of Ross Moon, and I saw a Blarney car outside the Ross Hotel in Killarney, and I said, that looked pretty cool, like with all the bikes up in it, and it was actually going to Ross Moon. So I said, I'd love to get into cycling. So I started cycling. My first road race was actually the John Drum Cup in Curragh. Mm-hmm. as a novice, an A4 cyclist, and you know, bizarrely, I actually won the thing. And you know, I started getting stronger and stronger, and I suppose, Ross Moon would always be a target, you know, for any Munster based cyclist, and now you know, all Ireland based cyclists really, and further afield. So you know, that was the goal, to try to make an impact in then the Kerry Group Ross Moon, now the Dornan Ross Moon. So you know, it's a real target for all cyclists in Ireland, and the, you know, that reflects in the quality of the field that's going to assemble this weekend. Mm-hmm.
And your own first Ross Moon, I mean, I mean obviously you're talking about going from racing the Drum Cup in Curragh to all of a sudden you're suiting up and cycling with all the rest of them. Can you remember your stage win?
I can, yeah. 2014, so it was a stage one. The race then actually came from Killardlin into Killarney, up through Kilcommon. We came out at Touring Cahill, down into, or through Scarty Glen, Castle Island. And that's actually, there was a break that had formed before Castle Island, and I went across on my own to that break. There was maybe 10 riders or so in it. Good, strong quality riders. Sean Lacey was there. There was a number of Dutch riders in it. I went across on my own, and we got working well and started pulling out a bit of a gap. And there was a lot of attacks coming in towards Killardlin, a fast finish. And just Whereas Estelis is on the rise of the hill, like I suppose one of my strengths would be from rowing, you know, that short, big effort near the line. So I made one of those big efforts and I got away and, you know, got clear ground and went up the hill in Killord and won by maybe 10 seconds or so. And I spent then the following day around Kenmare and Lorrock and that area in the yellow jersey. Very inexperienced at the time, lost the yellow jersey. And, you know, back, you know, the following day then I was challenging again for the stage. So I suppose maybe not like Mikey, I wasn't an all-rounder. I was tried to be a stage winner more so. And, so... You know, 2014 was probably the pinnacle of, we'll say, my Kerry Group Ross Moon achievements.
Well, I tell you, you're lucky people because 2014, you won your last stage. Kerry won the All-Ireland. 1978 was the start of Mickey O'Neill's four in a row. You won. So we'll say the cycling fellas were proving it right. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back. We'll talk more cycling.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now you listen to Terrace Talk until 8 o'clock this evening with me, Donald Barry. I'm joined by Cathal Moynihan, Mikey Breen and John Breen, the race director, of course, of the Dornan Race, Ross Moon even. New title sponsor, Kerry Connection.
New title sponsor, you're dead right, it's the Dornan Group. They're based in Little Island in Cork, but they work throughout Europe. And you mentioned the Kerry Connection. Micheál O'Connor from SD is the managing director, so and Brendan Herbert is also a director living in Castlelands. But they have been so good to us, not only in terms of the sponsorship, but the buy-in so far has just been incredible. And they've been helped us in so many things. Mm-hmm. Publicity wise and so on with the race, they've been just top class to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it is a race, and I suppose that there's no point talking about the race in circles. Cathal, who should I be looking forward to seeing? What teams, what cyclists? Last year was Finn Crockett. He came out of the blue maybe and won it as well. There's never a whole lot at the end of the line in this. There's a couple of seconds. Nobody's going to win this by 3 minutes, is there?
No, it's highly unusual that, that would say it's a hotly contested event. And I was just looking through the provisional start list and there's real quality there this year. Like, there's a lot of young, strong riders there. I just looking through it, there's stage winners on Ross Talton, Kevin McCambridge. Last year, Dean Harvey was unlucky not to win the overall. There's previous overall winners in Mark Dowling. There's two stage winners that are going to be back again for four in CC. There's Thomas Spriggett and Dominic Jackson. So, you know, there's an awful lot of talent there. It's going to be settled probably, you know, anything from a few seconds to maybe out to a minute or so. I think the real, decision point or the main splitting point would say is probably going to be stage three, but it's really down to the riders how they want to race it. And, you know, it could open up as early as stage one, or it could be on the line right on the last lap in Killorden. You just don't know. So it's down to the riders to race it. And like I said, there's quality there. There's even an unusual fact of there's Tom Pidcock, his younger brother Joe Pidcock. So Tom rides, he's an Olympic champion on the mountain bike. His younger brother Joe Pidcock is on at Trinity Racing, so he's actually coming over. So there's a lot of, you know, up and coming talent there, as well as some veteran stage winners in Anthony Walsh and Paul Kennedy. So there's it could go any direction really, and that's the truth. Last year, Seth Dunwoody set stage four alight, and he'll be eager to make an impact overall this weekend. So he's riding on the Irish junior team, and then we'd say more locally then Killarney have an under 23 team, which is exciting to see. So fellas there like Mark McGlynn and Ewan Buckley, and there's a very talented Milo Donaldson as well. So, you know, it's going to be exceptionally exciting racing, and, you know, it could go any way, really. I suppose if I was to pick someone out of the bunch, the obvious one is probably Dara Feely, who won at the weekend in the Des Hanlon. But then if I was going for maybe an outside bet, I might go Dean Harvey.
Bit of inside information, Dean Harvey. Mikey Breen, when you were racing in 1978, did you have that much information about who you were racing against? Did you know where the guys from Galway were? Did you have any idea who they were? Did you just gun the bike and off you go?
Well, we just knew on the day of the race, like, we didn't, that wasn't the same information as there is now, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Do you, looking at races, obviously, I suppose cycling is all about information, all sports is about information. I'm presuming now that when teams will look at the cyclists in certain teams, they'll know that they'll be weaker on some stages, that they'll be vulnerable in some stages, there'll be chances maybe to break them, or they mightn't have the best climbers or whatever. Is that the kind of tactics that goes into the racing these days?
Well, it is, really, because, like Cahill said there, like, you know, you have more information about everything, and you know who's going good, and you have more information now, really. That is way more updated, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Go back to 78, because I'm interested to know, of course, obviously we're talking about winning and you won Ross Moon. Was there much reaction in Kerry to it? Did people kind of like, wow, that's amazing, or was it a case that you were...
Well, John Mangan won it 2 years prior to I did in 75, or 75, yeah, and of course I had again 3 Killarlem and won it, well, going back a long time, but...
Yeah.
Killarlem was always kind of, you know, you always the kind of lads.
Yeah. And why that so? Why, like, we talk about Curra and they have a bit of rugby and we talk about North Kerry with the hurling gang and the whole lot. Why did cycling just take root there? For that particular time, maybe?
Well, I must have gone back away before, like, we were talking there, myself and John Breen. You know, you had the Gene Mangan before the John Mangans, and then mm-hmm. the Dennis Mangans was always in Killarlem, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And of course, it must help as well, John Breen, that Killarglen seems to be the hub of Ross Moon. For as long as I know about Ross Moon, it always finishes in Killarglen.
Absolutely, and you know, their host club for the last day. And I must give a mention to all the host clubs, starting with Curra, Abbeyfield, with a lot of help from Nottingham Gashel, Killarney, Sneem, through Louis Moriarty, and Killarney Cycling Club are hosting that stage. Sleeve Luke Ryer, they mentioned, and yes, Killarglen is just. Best finish you can get for a race like this, so we're so lucky to have it.
You'll be praying for weather, I presume, will you?
Praying for weather, yeah. You'd hope it can keep raining.
Is it easier or harder to cycle in the rain, John?
It never bothered me. The rain
didn't bother.
rain didn't really. I was that time, really. We used to go out in the rain training, it used to take much effect, really. Yeah.
Are cyclists separated in the weather, Cahill?
Yeah,
I presume you look at the Tour de France and you see some fellas coming down the descent and it's pouring and they're still ploughing on at 70 kilometres an hour and you have a few more fellas that just a little bit more cautious.
Yeah, look, I remember Ross Moons and huddling in the, we'll say, the tunnel in Waterville, and some fellas, you knew by the look of them that they weren't up for it.
Right.
And then other fellas, you knew that they were coming there to race. So, look, I think that the hardened racers are just going to get stuck in, irrespective of the weather. The gear these days is, you know, you can't but be comfortable nearly. And we'll say the bikes have changed significantly as well in recent years. And... you know, there's a comfort is increased with the size of the tyres and pressure in the tyres and so on. It's, you know, they're in the lap of luxury, really.
Yeah. Mikey, do you look at the bike now and say, gosh, that's not a bike at all?
I do. I still have it, actually.
Oh, yeah,
hanging up on the shed. I bought it for £60 off of Gene Mangan.
Wow.
In 1970.
Did he give you a deal with the £60 or did he play hard?
Well, I'd say he was always good to the Killarlem lads anyway.
you paid more for being offered.
It was really £60 I paid for my wife, the Rathbone. Oh. She's hanging up with you. Well, it is for the scrap now, anyway.
Well, she's done scrap it at all. I mean, it's probably worth more now than the £60. Come here, when you look at your bike that's hanging up now and look at the bike that Cahill came through in 2014, and I suppose even the bikes now are even different in those 10 years.
No comparison at all.
Do you reckon it's easier to cycle these ones? The new ones?
Well, either way, more comfortable, I presume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Comfort has to be key cycling. I mean, God, I mean, I cycled, I know, 4 miles one day and Jesus, like, I couldn't wait to get off the bike and put it back into the shed. So comfort has to be key these days.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the bikes have changed dramatically, really, even in the last 10 years, you know. I would say they've disc brakes, power meters, everybody has a power meter, and... Like, realistically, it is expensive to cycle these days. You know, the bikes that the guys will be racing at the weekend, most of them will cost €5,000 and they can be up to €15,000. So it's changed in that way a lot, and comfort has increased, and like one of the main things is the clothing that they wear. It's specific to the each weather condition, so you know it's comfortable, all right.
And Mike, you wanted a bike for £60, huh? Just cause you good cyclist always been, Mike.
We don't even want pair of shorts.
And you don't want pair of shorts. Well, there you go, John Breen. Final word to you. We have a minute and 9 seconds. I'm sure you do a time trial in that. Have you a few people in the tank?
I have to give a shout out to our committee, who are just such a hard working committee and brilliant people to work with. That's Sinead Moriarty, Stephen Daly and Mark Murphy. They're just put in so much time into this, and again, they're just a pleasure to work with. I have to thank the Gardaí, who are so helpful to us and provide such a great service, and to Cycling Munster and Cycling Ireland, who provide assistance also and backing, like Dornan, you know, more than maybe financial, bring a lot to the event as well.
Extra support. I mean, that's something that's lost with sponsors. People think it's just a check and money, but obviously there's a lot more with sponsors, and I suppose it's the experience they give as well, and I suppose it's always nice to have them kind of overlooking your shoulder as well and helping them go forward. Well, listen, guys, the very best of luck. Mikey, have you any idea who's going to win it? Cahill gave me about 15 choices, but no, he didn't put it down.
Maybe Feely, I would be thinking, might win it. Feely.
Darragh Feely.
Wow. He says, as casual as the day is long, huh? Hands in the pockets, Feely. He must know something. Who told you that, though? More inside information that you didn't give out.
Really, just he's a good bike rider.
Fair play, good bike rider. Yeah. Well, listen, you were a fantastic bike rider yourself in the day. Cahill Mining, an Olympian. I mean, I could have went down the rowing route, but you're to cycling's night. It was fantastic what you've done for your country. And, of course, the last Kerry winner. Hopefully, that's not a title we want you to have. Comfortably, no, you know, you can have it for a while, but hopefully we'll get another Kerry winner along the way. It's nice to give those up as well. That was Terrace Talk this evening. Thanks to John Breen, Mikey Breen, Cahill Moynihan, and Declan Dunhill, of course, below there in Port McGee, John and Liam, of course, at the start, and Dan Kearney as well, and our hardest working PRO over in Lisbon, who came off the bench to score a point to get a draw against My Venture. And they're all the big stories that we tell every week on Terrace Talk. We'll do it all again next week. Up next, Talk Sauce.